And I'm going to be talking about not so much discomfort in the sense of pain in the body, as opposed to external discomfort, like it was today. Pretty uncomfortable. And it's an important, it's not only about just external discomforts in terms of heat and cold, or being around loud noise, or it's also about practicing when we're in uncomfortable situations, when we're in situations where we're really bored and we have nothing to do and we feel uncomfortable, or when we're around people that we really don't want to be around but we have to be because it's our job, or we're stuck in a place where we can't leave. So it's about that kind of being in a uncomfortable situation, or being just in discomfort that's externally based. And I've given, there's lots of talks on the web about working with pain, but this is more about the sort of external discomfort. And in our minds, from a very young age, we train ourselves to what's known as, I can't remember the name of a child psychologist, but there's a famous child psychologist who talked about the false self, that when we're in an uncomfortable situation, what we tend to do is go up into our heads, and it forms the foundation for something called dissociation, where we become unaware of everything that's going on around us, what the context is. Because we're uncomfortable, so we tend to seek what we think is a safe place, which is up in our thoughts. We tend to, when we're in traumatic situations, which is a good idea in a traumatic situation, to race up into our minds so that we aren't aware of the trauma going on around us. For example, soldiers in war often will black out amidst horrific violence. Rape victims will black out often. People who are in violent situations. And very often, later on in life, anything that triggers a memory of the original trauma will cause another dissociative episode. A sort of, we can have dissociative episodes re-triggered. Now, it's not only trauma, though. People who do clinical work on PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, talk about how we all suffer from it in various degrees. And there's always a certain, well, not always, but there's often a certain amount of dissociation going on, especially when we're young and we're uncomfortable. People can block off entire parts of their childhood when something uncomfortable is happening, when a father or mother have disappeared, or a parent is acting irrationally, or when we're being terrified by instability or anything like that. We can race up into our heads and seek shelter in our thoughts and in our mental landscape, because we don't want to be present with what's going on around us. And this sets a lifetime practice of avoidance, trying to avoid anything uncomfortable. And when you talk with especially children and teenagers, it's not like it's a decision, but you often notice, until they get the wiring that happens when you're older, where you begin to develop what's known as axons that can override the amygdala, which triggers this. When you're talking with a teenager and they're uncomfortable, they often will space out. They'll go away. They'll disappear into some nether world because they are just uncomfortable. And that's one of the ways we react to it. We run away. And then in life, we as children, we develop other strategies of when running away into our thoughts don't work. We might get very frustrated. We might get very angry. We might yell and scream and throw a tantrum, trying to get rid of whatever situation is making us uncomfortable. There's also a tendency to take it very personally, to think, why is this happening to me? If you've ever seen a little child when it's hot outside, they'll say, you know, to their parents, why is it hot? Stop it making it hot for me. You know, not understanding that it's actually hot for everyone. As we grow older, we begin to get a sense, most of us get a sense of, some people I know don't seem to have any sense that there are other people with minds out there, but the vast majority of us have mirror genes and recognize that everybody else to a certain degree is hot or uncomfortable. So, but there's still this underlying tendency to take it personally, to get frustrated, get angry, and to try to run away or avoid or push away discomfort. What else do we do? I wrote some other notes that we do in childhood. We cling to the belief as children that it's not going to pass. We tend to believe that uncomfortable situations, like we think if we have to go and admit we've done something wrong, or fess up to stealing something when we're a child, or go through an uncomfortable situation with someone, we don't want to do it because we think it's going to last forever, or that we'll forever be in that uncomfortable situation. And of course, all external situations pass. They always do. There is no external situation that lasts. It's all changing. But when we're young, we tend to think, when we're uncomfortable, that it's going to last forever. There's no knowledge of impermanence. So the Buddha talked in a lot of his talks. He talked about the building up the tool, which is actually one of the paramisas, and it's one of the divine. It's definitely an advanced attribute, not one of the divine abodes, but an advanced attribute of tolerance, which is developing an ability to sit through minor discomforts, which is often why when we meditate, we'll talk about if you absolutely have to move in your meditation, that's fine. If your meditation is threatening to turn only to be about the fact that you're in pain, that's fine. But if it's a discomfort that you can instead observe and look at, this is in a sense undoing a lifetime of the habitual avoidance and running away from discomfort. And running away and avoidance is, if you read clinical psychology, it's actually one of the most unskillful tendencies that we develop as adults. It's not only little discomforts like rain, we run inside, or heat, we look for an air conditioner, or pain in the body, we look to move the body, or when we're cold, we immediately need to throw on a blanket or whatever. But this is actually extremely metaphorically, or not even metaphorically, it's extremely tied in to the way we react to all the other uncomfortable situations that happen to us in life. If in life we take personally, or, you know, any time we're uncomfortable or we're in a state of, you know, physical discomfort, or we're in a state of being in a situation where we're not 100% comfortable in our bodies, if we take it personally, or if we try to leave, or if we try to push it away, or if we get frustrated, all those tendencies we will bring into other kinds of situations that are unavoidable. For instance, situations where people tell us things that we need to hear but we don't want to particularly hear. Or when we're in situations where there's just a lot of, you know, interpersonal life has a lot of things that can go wrong. People say things we don't like. And we have this tendency to, unfortunately, the Buddha in his teaching the Eight Winds says that we have a tendency to really attach for our happiness to physical pleasure, which is, of course, impermanent. We have a tendency to attach to praise from other people. We really look for a sense of I'm okay from other people. We have a tendency to look for a sense of fame, for being well known and having a great reputation. And we also attach to a sense of having money or things or material wealth for a sense of security. So these are the four positive winds that tend to blow us around, and we tend to jump on these winds with our kites and our balloons or whatever the fuck we're on, and we float away into our happiness of, oh, everything's terrific, life is a joy. And then the problem, of course, is once you're up there in that little bubble of I just got wonderful praise at work, or from my friends all love me, and I've got a lot of Facebook friends or whatever, then the next thing we know, we're being blown around by the four opposite winds. Just as people are likely to praise us, they're also likely at any moment to blame us, often for no reason, just as their praise can sometimes be false or unreasonable or just for the sake of it. Sometimes people will blame us even when we've not done something wrong or when we have done something wrong. Just as we attach to a sense of material wealth, money can evaporate in a second, as we've all seen with the stock market. Just as we can achieve a sense of being well-known and famous, or at least having a reputation that's good in our line of work, so any moment that can go away. All famous people, even if 10 years after they, or 15 years after they die, very few people know who they are. One of my favorite examples is Eddie Cantor. Nobody knows who he was, but actually he was the Madonna of his day. Every song he released was a hit. Now you don't know who Eddie Cantor is, and if you do, you're an enormous music geek like myself. And of course, physical pleasures, they're all impermanent. You might feel good, you might get a sense of physical ease, but it's going to pass. And if we get attached to any of these things, praise, fame, money or wealth or possessions or physical senses of ease, if these are where we're looking for our lasting peace, we're setting ourselves up to be in a balloon without any, you know, just to be blown all the way around. So the importance of working with discomfort, not only is that it develops tolerance, which the Buddha said was extremely important to set us on the spiritual path, but it also sets us on the path to developing a lasting inner peace within. Because the more we become acquainted with being able to sit through being a little uncomfortable, we begin to realize, okay, this excessive dependence upon external things to make me feel good, to make me feel like I'm okay, to make me feel like I'm worthwhile, to give me a sense of purpose in life or a sense of security. Well, there's nothing wrong with enjoying external things, so long as we enjoy them knowing that they will pass. There comes a time when we have to develop inner peace, a lasting inner peace, a peace that comes not from external conditions that are changing, but from within. By working with the breath, working with body sensations, working with thoughts, generosity, goodwill, gratitude. There's all kinds of things that we have at any time that are at our disposal that we can develop a sense of security within. We don't have to live our lives completely needing external reality to make us feel safe, good, and secure. That's a large part of what this practice was. In fact, the Buddha said there's really only four requisites that we need for the spiritual path. We need some form of shelter for when it's really cold outside or unbearably hot. We need clothing, we need food, and we need medicine. Once we get those four things, the Buddha said, basically, to develop a sense of a wise relationship with those four things, and then to get about the practice of learning how to develop a sense of peace within, not looking all the time for our security to come from without. Again, everything I teach is about balance. I'm not urging any of you to sell all your possessions, don orange robes, and you know, move to India and give up your householder lives. This is about redressing the balance. Most of us spend all of our time externally aware, very unaware of the body, constantly searching in the world for opportunities to feel better, to feel more secure, to have a purpose. And so much of this practice is just giving us another choice, a choice of finding that stuff within. You can still look for it without, but if you have the option, when it's really hot or really cold or you're really uncomfortable around people, you're really bored, you're stuck somewhere you don't want to be, you'll have another option. You'll have another choice of where to find your happiness. So I think that this is a valuable tool. Before I get into the some of the meditation, just reviewing quickly the meditations that work with this or the approaches that work with this, the Buddha also taught that and it's been taught ever since that suffering is resistance times pain or discomfort. And what that means is the original pain in life, or the original discomfort, the fact that somebody says something mean, or the fact that, you know, we get shot by an arrow, or the fact that we step on something painful or stub our toe, or the fact that we're really hot or really cold or whatever, all these discomforts are, those parts are inevitable. But the vast majority of the suffering we experience is not from the externals, but by the way we relate to it, which is that we tend to develop vedana, which is physical tightness against it. The body becomes tight and becomes uncomfortable trying to push away what it's feeling. And then once the body develops vedana, it might be in your stomach or in your shoulders, a sense of tightness, a sense of I'm uncomfortable, then we tend to, as we said earlier, jump into our thoughts, atamayata, and then once we're up in our thoughts, dissociating, looking for safety, then we develop what's known as papancha, which is lots and lots of obsessive thoughts. Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? Why did I come here? Why am I stuck with this person? Why is it so hot? When is this heat wave going to end? When is it going to be more comfortable? Why did I do this? Blah, blah, blah. Why are they doing that to me? And as the mind fills up with papancha, we suffer more. So you see, the original discomfort is far outweighed by the way we react to it. The Buddha says we shoot ourselves with many arrows every time we get shot with one. And so the idea of spiritual practice is, while you're never going to get rid of the inevitable pains of life, we're all going to grow old, we're all going to get sick, there's always going to be, as the Buddha said, things that happen in life that we don't want, there's always going to be things that we want that we don't get. If we stop relating to it like it's happening to us personally, like we're the only ones who don't get what we want, if we stop getting frustrated at the inevitable discomforts in life, if we stop trying to avoid all the inevitable discomforts that we have to go through, if we develop a sense of tolerance, the amount of stress and suffering we'll experience in life will drastically diminish. Drastically. All of the avoidable suffering we can remove. We can't remove the unavoidable pain and the unavoidable discomforts, but we can remove the bulk of the suffering we experience, which is the way we relate to it, by trying to push away, avoid, run away, take things personally, etc. So, to end this, some of the tools the Buddha offered is, especially for example, like when we're hot, for example, focusing into an area during meditation where you're uncomfortable, finding it could be the hottest part or the area in the body where you're most discomfort or you're most uncomfortable, and first observing it and letting go of this idea that it's something that's always going to last and it's solid, and instead seeing that it's made up of changing heat in the body or cold in the body are made up of many different sensations. And more important, the practice of relaxing vedana, which is, for example, when it's really cold out. My dad, when I was a very young kid and he had just got into Buddhism, he told me that if you stop tensing against the cold when it's really cold outside, you'll feel much less cold. And so he would work, literally he would actually say, okay, when it was cold, and he generally would drag me out skiing, which I hated, but he'd say, okay, just, your arms are probably pretty tight, just breathe and relax them. And as soon as I did, I'd actually feel warmer. And when I stopped contracting my stomach and stopped tightening my shoulders, I'd feel warmer in my body, because part of the discomfort was all this tension. And of course, when I was tensing, the blood was going away from the skin and making me feel colder as well. But it's true that a lot of this discomfort we experience in any situation, be it an uncomfortable conversation with someone, being stuck with people we don't want to be with, being bored, being trapped in a place we don't want to be, a lot of the discomfort is not being caused by that place, that person, that situation, but it's being caused by something we're unaware of, which is the fact that we're tense, physically tense, and we're not aware of it. So become aware of the body, find the areas that are reacting to what's going on, breathe into them, and relax yourself. Whenever I'm going into a meeting that I don't want to go into, I always find the area in my body that gets tense, and I breathe into it, and I relax it, and I make it comfortable. Also, another part of the, and I'll end with this because it's another tool that I find extremely useful, which is, as we did in the meditation, find an area inside. Might be your hands, which are generally pretty relaxed in my case, or another part of your body, which generally doesn't carry vedana, stress. And see if you can use the breath to stretch, to knead or spread the sense of ease throughout the other parts of the body, so that you slowly can work the comfort of the body or the areas that are comfortable into the areas that aren't so comfortable. This is also an important, all these things are very important because they stop us from going up in our heads, dissociating, running away, avoiding, not being present. And they develop the ability to stay present when things are not going the way we want, so that we can actually instead develop tools that will reduce the amount of stress that we are unwittingly adding to any given situation. Finally, if you do notice any of that tendency to add thoughts like, why is this happening to me, the taking it personally, reflecting on the universality of all experience, that everybody experiences boredom, everybody experiences not doing something right at work, or everybody experiences loneliness or boredom or whatever, if we reflect on that and we really deeply, deeply get it, it also tends to remove a lot of the suffering we add to uncomfortable situations. And I said finally, but I'm actually going to end with a very, I find it, humorous story. And this will definitely be it. A monk I was sitting with told this, I thought it was a very funny story. You'll probably think it's a yawn. But he talked about when he was at, I think he was in Thailand. And they would have vendors that would hawk all their foods and all their goods. And there was this one, you know, hawk meaning sell out loud, advertise. And there was this one vendor who said, and they didn't tend to be over, you know, zealous there. They'd be polite and they just say, have one thing that they repeat over and over again. And this one vendor would say over and over again, today's dumplings are better than yesterday's. That was his advertisement. Today's dumplings are better than yesterday's. Each day, the monk would go by and it would be the same thing. Today's dumplings are better than yesterday's. And the monk, who is quite a logical guy, said to himself and to, I think, the monk with him, well, how could that be? How could every day the dumplings get better and better? I mean, years and years ago, I mean, well, how could they just keep on getting better? That philosophically makes no sense. So finally, after they went and they the guy gave them some dumplings, because they didn't, obviously, his monk carry money, but he graciously gave them some dumplings, and the monk said to him, by the way, how is it that you say every day that today's dumplings are better than yesterday's. And the merchant wisely responded, well, today's dumplings are better than yesterday's because yesterday's dumplings are rotting in the garbage or being digested in people's stomachs. Now, what does that mean? That means that all the happinesses you've experienced in the past are gone. They're all rotten. They're all gone. They don't exist anymore. The happiness that you get right here and right now is the only happiness that can possibly exist because yesterday's dumplings have decayed. They're not here anymore. You only have today's dumplings. No matter how bad they are, they're better than what's rotting in the... They're here. They're real. They're not a figment of your imagination. They're not a past memory or something that you want to bring into being that doesn't exist yet. So, that's the story about today's dumplings and about being with discomfort. Thank you for listening, and now is the chance for you to ask any questions or share any comments about anything I've talked about tonight.
Nobody on.
Nobody on. Hi.